In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents a voice of truth and inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence. Always remembering, life changes. Our special guest tonight is Rachel Tyler, a business coach who focuses on life purpose. This is radio like you've never felt before. And now your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you very much. This is exciting. This is an exciting show because our guest, we're doing something that I've never done before, or we've never done before on this show, and that is I'm being interviewed instead of me actually interviewing the guest, which is, it wasn't my idea, but I'm excited about it. So our guest, Rachel Taylor, is from New Zealand. And so you'll be able to get that. The audience is silently saying yay, or at least one person, Rachel Taylor. You do have fans in the back afterwards. They started waving as well. So she's from New Zealand, and it's interesting because I was telling her that at the beginning of the show, I have this monologue, and that 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, we played the introduction to, or not the introduction, but the apology from the president of Australia to the Aborigines, the prime minister.
That's
right. Yeah. For the, it's like a president, but only prime minister. Okay. In Australia to the Aborigines for all of what was done to them over generations and generations for many years. And so I was telling her about that, and she said, oh, that's really interesting, because in New Zealand, they have the Maoris, which are the original people from New Zealand, and that the Maoris never gave up their sovereignty like the Aborigines did. Yeah. And she said that it's because of one particular leader or two particular leaders within the Maori tribe that didn't happen. So, I mean, one can argue and say that New Zealand's a smaller country and maybe the pressure wasn't as strong. But obviously, I mean, these kinds of genocides or whatever you want to call them, pressures happened all over the world. And the fact that these Maori original peoples were able to keep their sovereignty and stay true to who they were, and then eventually they were even integrated into society somewhat, or as much as they wanted to, or what have you. So it was kind of interesting. And then what was also interesting is that Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, came and studied from the leader of the Maoris how they put up their resistance, their peaceful resistance, and then used that same theory, process, whatever he learned from there for what was happening in his country in India. So what a history, right?
Yeah,
so
I've never heard that.
Yeah, I've never heard that either. So I'm grateful for having brought up the subject of what we shared a couple weeks ago on the show. Now, a couple weeks ago, we actually played a piece of the president's prime minister's speech, but several people, since I mentioned it, said they wanted to actually hear the song that I was talking about, which inspired this whole conversation that I shared a couple weeks ago. So for those who didn't hear it and want to hear what we were talking about, you can go a couple weeks ago and listen to that monologue. But for this week, suffice it to say, what inspired all this was our friend, Thomas Baylor, sending me a copy of a song that he had just worked on, which was, it used the voice of the prime minister making the apology, and then actual Aborigine people with their instruments in the background and a children's choir. It was just so an emotional experience. Unfortunately, we won't be able to play at all. But first of all, I want to thank Thomas Baylor for having originally sent it to me, and then having resent the clip to me with the permission of Mark Veja of the Black Eyed Peas, who said that if people are interested, they could go to vgroupla.com. That's V like Victor, then the word group, and then LA as in Los Angeles.com. Or there's a link on the Black Eyed Peas site, to hear this. Because Mark Veja, who actually came up with this idea and put this forth. He's had a lifelong battle for the rights of Aborigines. So we wanted to mention that. Also, we want to mention Russell James, who directed the project as well and made the Nomad tour possible, where they actually went around and toured this piece. So let's go ahead and play just a minute and a half or so of that before we go on with the rest of the show. I think you'll all love it.
It's time. It's time today. The Parliament has come together to right a great wrong, to remove a great stain from the nation's soul. Today we honour the Indigenous peoples of this land, the oldest continuing cultures in human history, linking our Australian continent to the most ancient prehistory of our planet. These great and ancient cultures we are blessed, truly blessed, to have among us. We reflect on their past mistreatment. We reflect in particular on the mistreatment of those who were stolen generations. This blemished chapter in our national history. But the stolen generations are not intellectual curiosities. They are human beings. Human beings who have been damaged deeply by the decisions of parliaments and governments. We apologise for the laws and policies of successive parliaments and governments that have inflicted profound grief, suffering and loss. There comes a time in the history of nations when their peoples must become fully reconciled to their past if they are to go forward with confidence to embrace their future. Reconciliation is in fact an expression of a core value of our nation, and that value is a fair go for all. These are uncomfortable things to be brought out into the light. They are not pleasant. They are profoundly disturbing. We are the bearers of many blessings from our ancestors, and therefore we must also be the bearer of their burdens as well. It's time to recognize the injustices of the past.
It goes on for a little bit more, and I wish we could play it all, but suffice it to say, you can go to vgroupla.com to hear the rest of that, or to the Black Eyed Peas site and hear it there. I want to thank Thomas Baylor again, Mark Vahan, and of course, Russell James for making this song and for making it available to us to play on the show. So with that, I want to remind everybody that you're listening and watching Life Changes with Filippo. I am your host, Life Changes. I'm your host, Life Changes. And I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, and it is my pleasure being of service by hosting this show today. And you can hear us every Monday night and eventually see us. But in the meantime, just hear us at the BBS Radio Network at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here out of Los Angeles, California. You can also see us on Facebook. Join us there. You can find us on Twitter and also on, it's so funny having an audience because they're all making faces. They're all, you know, they're all trying to give clues as to what it's so much fun. And where else? You can find us on YouTube and all over the place. And if you want to see, maybe we should turn the camera around and show everybody the funny audience. I mean, I don't mean funny audience. The audience is being funny. But with that, let's continue on with the show and bring up Rachel Taylor. Now, Rachel Taylor has worked as a business coach with over 300 global businesses across a wide variety of industries, utilizing a systems-based approach to replicate or sell the businesses. She has assisted in building some of the most successful businesses in New Zealand, from nothing to incredibly successful brands and multi-million dollar businesses. In working with her entrepreneurial clients over many years, she observed that they often experience little sense of purpose in their businesses, viewing them as a means to an end and hoping that, quote, someday they'd be free enough to have a life. In response, she developed a range of products to help clients access their personal vocational calling and create successful commercial structures that reflect this purpose. More than 4,000 people have participated in her program throughout New Zealand, Australia, California, Italy, London, and New York, and now in Los Angeles, including me.
Yay!
Evidently, Rachel will be interviewing me for her new book, On Purpose, or rather, the new book about purpose. And so, before you proceed with the interview, which I find very awkward momentarily, but I'll get over it because life changes and so does the show. What brought you to this? So you're out there working with clients and you're recognizing that they don't have purpose. So what?
Yeah, well, that took a while to get to that point, actually.
I'm sure.
What happened initially was that the upshot of the coaching, and this was about 15 years ago, so this was before the whole coaching wave kicked in, but just really briefly, the point of working with these entrepreneurial clients was that they were stuck in their businesses. I mean, they at one point loved them. Most of the time when you start a business, you have some real ignition around what you're doing. But it's like it had gone full cycle and they had kind of declined and they really felt quite trapped. And so we would work to systemize and get them free of it. And these are people doing 16-hour days. I mean, entrepreneurs typically work really hard, you know. So what would happen is we'd work 3 or 4 years, sometimes 2 years together, to achieve this personal vision that they had, which was to have cashed out, have the houses paid off, have the money in the bank and be sitting really sweet.
You know? And then they die.
Well, you know, funny you say that, within weeks of the vision, you know, I'm up in Hawaii, supposed to be chilling. Out of my 15-year prison. I would get a call or some version of this saying, oh, my God, Rach, I'm having this meltdown. You know, what do I do? I've lost my sense of identity. Well, they didn't say that, but that's what was happening. Right. My sense of purpose. I want back in. I don't know. You know, the landscape's too broad now. You know, what am I supposed to do with my life? And I realized there was something more fundamental than the pursuit of, a fiscal, set of assets that was much more fundamental to them that needed to be one step ahead of what they were building commercially. And that was really a kind of a sense of calling or meaning or purpose. And I recognized at that point that it actually changed. It evolved over time. Most people relate to it like it's quite static. It's constantly changing. So staying current with it is quite tricky and how you do that.
So you not only have to find it, you have to keep revising it. And most people don't even look for it to begin with.
There's a whole variety of places people experience, you know, purpose from, and some never experience it at all. You get people that have kind of more like a default pattern with it. They're the cruisers. They're the ones that will often sort of just slide into the next experience and then slide into the next. There's nothing deliberate about it. You get the ones that there's some real sort of guidance going on. And then there's a whole set of people that knew what they wanted to be from very young, and there's a real kind of calling that they stayed true to, you know, all the way through. And then there are others that get a kind of an ordination at a certain point. Something significant happens in their life. And there's in the classic Christian sacrament sense of the word, there's almost an ordination that occurs, like a set of almost divine orders that come down.
Now is the time for you to do this.
Right.
Would you say, it sounded like in that group, there was a group that came pre-programmed, let's say, to have a certain purpose. Would you, you're nodding your head for those who can't hear, or
yes,
for those who can't see. But would you say that everybody comes pre-programmed, but not everybody taps in, or some it happens later, like the ordination, or some never get it?
I think there's two things I'd say about that. One is that, yes, I do believe that there is, and I would say it as like an intrinsic design behind everything that occurs in our life. And in fact, my work has been around the idea of a blueprint, you know, some kind of coding that you can scratch under the surface of the skin, you know, what's on the surface, and actually see it. So part of the work that I do is establishing what that blueprint is. And I use archetypes to do that. So, you know, as we interview today, I may be bringing and reflecting back some of the archetypes that you're running. So it's a kind of originally a Jungian theory, but we've kind of extrapolated on it with this work. So yes, I definitely believe that there is an intrinsic design behind everything that occurs in our life, developmentally, in terms of our internal development and the development of our external worlds, which purpose is a part of.
Well, I know we have a short period of time, and I know you have a lot of questions for me, which, speaking of purpose, I'm finding that either I'm nervous or my purpose really is to interview you, and I don't want to be interviewed. No, but I know you're writing your book and you've interviewed a lot of people, and I've read some excerpts from it, and I think, wow, what amazing stories. So I was honored that you wanted to interview me as well for the book. And I'm thinking, really, is my story that amazing to you?
Well, you know, I guess there's a couple of things about that. One is that I find every story amazing. I mean, because I'm a bit like a mad scientist studying this whole phenomena, I'm trying to map it. At some level, I'm kind of trying to map and track the terrain of finding and following this elusive calling that inspires and ignites and kind of drives us crazy and at times feels like it's completely dead. And, you know, it's got a whole life cycle. There's a whole phenomenon that's wrapped into it, right? You know?
All right, I get it.
So we're not just talking about the glory days with it here. This is a very real take on, I mean, for me, purpose is a kind of a soul phenomenon. It's, you know, I think there's a worthwhile distinction to draw between what you might describe as your typical kind of career orientation or even business commercial orientation and the purposeful orientation. And there's many books and wonderful, very, very solid theories around how to navigate from the career business success perspective. But those laws, the laws that govern those, are a separate set of laws than the ones that govern purpose. Purpose is a whole other conversation, which is a lot more to do with heart and soul and the expression of something very essential. So we're not going to probably in today's session go too deep into that end of it, but just enough to say that this is really kind of the ground of being behind it in a sense.
Okay.
So I guess, and then to bring it back to you, you know, when we started talking, you're a very gifted being, and there's a lot of, if you like, examples of the distinctions of purpose kind of woven into your path, and that's what initially really interested me around interviewing you. And so I thought what we might do, these questions are just a very light sort of way to start the process. It's like a process of excavation, actually. We're kind of excavating into your blueprint. We're kind of looking under the surface and having a little scratch and seeing what's going on in there. And you'll find as we dig that there are, you know, some pretty core principles that will come out, which I'll reflect back to you. And, you know, we don't know what we'll find yet, but I think we'll have an interesting time. And this process is really just what I do when I work with a client. It's just a series of questions. And, you know. So let's start with childhood, because, I mean, I know some of the
stories. Ask me anything, I'm willing to answer anything you want.
Just for the record. The arms and legs got really crossed tightly at that point. No body language involved here, of course. but very lightly, it's a very, this question's kind of an interesting one, and we do it in all our workshops, and it's so revealing. It's just very simple. It's like, what did you want to be when you were a kid? Now, I know you've got some amazing history, which is on the website. I've loved reading about your experience of, you know, being in this Italian family and it being so Italian that you didn't even realize you were in America, actually, right, until you went to school. So this is all part of the fabric of your development. You know, these are all kind of imprints on your soul, actually, quite early on. But all of that aside for the moment, so we've got some imprints around Italian, we've got some imprints around music. We want to probably dig around those a bit, you know, around being an entertainer, which is one of the archetypes you're running. But let's just start with, if you can remember, what it is that you wanted to be or do in childhood. Do you have any recollection of that?
Actually, a few weeks back, I told a story on air during the monologue that as a child, I wanted to be Filippo.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to be. And wow. We might have actually talked about, but when other children were asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? They would say a doctor or this or that. And I would just say Filippo. To me, just being Filippo was everything. And so I didn't understand anything else. And that lasted for quite a while. And I would say, actually, I'm glad I'm reminded of it, because in a sense, is there really anything else I could be? Because as I look at my life now, over the past, how old am I, 28? So over the past 28 years, she laughed. No, but over the past many decades.
I'm not buying. I should be buying.
I said many decades. 4 decades and some. I've been many things. And even today, I'm many things to many people. And so how does one say what all that is? And now I'm getting philosophical, but as a child, I didn't know. I just said Filippo.
Yes.
But what I would do as a child, I would always like to tell stories or ask people questions about their lives or know about their lives. Mm-hmm. I would like to entertain. I would do magic tricks, or I would play little jokes on people just to get everybody laughing. And mm-hmm. so I would sing, I would play the pianos, tell a story, you know, something to engage people.
So immediately we can start to hear in that, you know, you've got the entertainer archetype running, but you've also got, whether we call it the psychologist, or you've got some deeper interest in understanding humanity that was starting to already play itself out through that.
Yeah. How do you know that? We didn't really talk that much about all this.
But you can just hear it. I don't know about you guys. I mean, for me, it's crystal clear. I mean, this is the beautiful thing about, well, any of the coaching world is just good questioning. I mean, this is what you're doing when you're interviewing. So you've got the interviewer archetype too, which is a more recent kind of phenomenon. But all of these are threads. They're kind of like, I think of them as threads in a tapestry or notes in a, and I'm switching metaphors. But if you think of the soul as having a constellation of notes, like a chord, and these are very essential qualities. Whilst we might say you've got the archetype of the entertainer and you've got the musician, and you've described it earlier as having these sort of broad things, many things to many people, those many things, we could almost pick everyone in the room and kind of pull out those separate threads. And that's what we do in this work, is actually identify what are the threads, because we all are multifaceted like this. And each of these threads act as a kind of an energy or a resonance or a particular very beautiful quality that can be felt. So when Filippo walks in the room, in walks this combination of this student of humanity, you know, with this ability to kind of step forward and really hold a strong single, you know, how would you describe it? Like you open a field for people to come into, and as all entertainers do, you know, you've got all these various beautiful dynamics that are existing within your character, you know, and how those play out and which ones play out at which times, they're all in a life cycle. So each one of them are rising and falling, you know, so some of them you might do the entertainer one for another 20 years and it gets to the point where it's like, okay, well, it's not so interesting any longer.
Mm.
You know, some of them are declining, actually. I mean, one example for me, I have a strong lineage around being an artist. My family had art schools, but in my home, it was a kind of there was acrimony around it. You know, it was a difficult subject. So I never discovered my artist aspect until I was 30. Ended up in a castle in Florence, in Fiesole, with an artist for a month. And she said, Rach, we're going to unblock this. You know, and she made me go collect paintings that I was attracted to, and we went and bought art supplies. We did everything but the art.
Mm.
And then on the day before I left, she started me sketching, and I worked from 10 a.m. through till 1 p.m. the following day, right through the night, and created three huge canvases. It just all poured out, and suddenly the artist archetype was alive within me. But this is how it works. I was 30 before that birthed out, you know. So they're all in various stages of kind of incline or and decline, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are you saying for people that are looking for purpose, a good place to start is childhood?
Yeah, it is. Because, and even though with you, what we came up with was I am Filippo, I'm sure it's no coincidence now, this is a major branding point for you. I am Filippo is what is on, you know, so there's some strong sense. Now, I don't know if we probably don't have time to look at your astrology, but I imagine if I had a dig in there, probably what we'd find is you've probably got some prominent Leo in your chart, because the keynote for Leo is I am, right? So most likely, so can you see how the tapestry starts to build in
That's
its dimensionality, you
That's
see?
That's interesting.
And so when we're working with clients, what we're doing is we're building this dimensionality out and starting to understand, you know, the phases that the client is in. And so let's just stay with you and stay with this idea in childhood. What are the things that you loved and were naturally good at? Or tell me a little bit about the music or how the entertainer, the musician and the entertainer archetype and how they started to surface out really young. Because I think you were performing quite young, didn't you?
I was actually. My parents used to put me on the kitchen table and have me perform for their guests long before I could remember.
There you go.
And obviously it wasn't them who wanted that. It was obviously me because I had that in me. And I continued that and then continued that in school. And then, you know, it's interesting. I was just sharing a story with a friend the other day that I never was a part of all of the entertainment that happened. I would just step in when the time was right. Or like I even as an actor and in school, I went to find out that there was a part that I really wanted. And so I went in and everybody laughed at me because who is this person walking in from nowhere thinking he's going to take a part when all the drama club people and all of that were there and they've been studying and I've never taken a drama class and whatever. So I got in and I got the part. Mm-hmm. So I look at that and say, okay, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. But then I either got derailed or because of family pressure or what have you, I went to a field completely different. Mm-hmm. So putting us together with, you know, with what was reality did not work for me. So it ended up being a problem that I never ended up resolving.
Now let's speak to that, because that dynamic I have seen more times than I could shake a stick at. It's very, very common. Now, and I think there's some worthwhile underlying distinctions that are worth, you know, speaking to. So what happens is you've got, in your case, let's just say your little kind of acorn seed of potential landed in fairly fertile soil, okay? And you, in your case, around those archetypes it did, you were being acknowledged and kind of encouraged to come out and shine, you know? And interestingly, too, even just this kind of like, you know, growing up as Italian and having a very Italian identity within a community that wasn't Italian, within a, you know, within a nation that actually wasn't Italy, right? will have fortified you at some level in terms of the early development of your being in being able to be quite centered and grounded in who you are. I am Filippo, right? This is the call. I want to be Filippo, I am Filippo, right? And out of my way, right? Get out of my way, because here I am. So it would have developed quite a kind of commanding presence, you know, quite young, which actually your path will have needed. If we were to timeline it forward in your path, we would see probably still what's yet to come. Some of the reasons that at 5 and 6, you had to have that developmental influence. Can you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You've already probably seen some of that actually. But so we fast track forward in time, and then we go, okay, you had some early good support around, and I'm only picking two archetypes. I'm only picking the musician and the entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
We could dig, there'll be a whole host more in there, right?
Wow.
But we've got those two, the musician, the entertainer, and then we get to this point where there's a certain stage where those become either compromised or they become challenged, if you like, in some shape or form.
So in other words, you're good at that. Yeah, you can get any part you want. Yeah. But that's not where the bread and butter is going to come from.
Right, now, bingo. That's it. That's not where the bread and butter is going to come from. Right. Now, that bread and butter conversation, I'm glad you brought the old bread and butter conversation up, because, you know, this is one that that's really so prevalent, and it really is kind of the enemy to purpose in many regards. And I don't mean to be glib or flippant about it, because there's a whole body of teaching that I would give if we had time around that. There's a requirement for that kind of commercial, commercial interface, particularly being a business coach. I'm really aware of that. But when it's singularly focused on as the main driver, it actually distorts the flow of purpose completely. It distorts it both as a young person trying to follow what it is that innately is theirs to do, and it distorts it when it's the singular pursuit at a commercial level. And there's plenty of businesses out there that are singularly focused on money, that's the primary driver. But just coming back to you, so basically you enter this period of kind of getting real, growing up, being responsible, entering the real world. I mean, these are all the things that we're told, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then off you go down this other path. And what was the path? I can't even recall.
IBM.
IBM, right. Off you go down the IBM path. There's a few IBM stories, by the way. I've got clients with a few. But so you go down that path, and what do you discover? What happens in that path?
Actually, I was quite good at it, which made it difficult as well.
Yes.
And I wasn't very good at climbing the corporate ladder, I must say.
Right.
But and I also will say this, that I do see it as a derailment in a way.
Yes.
And then on the other hand, I do see having learned something that can serve. Oh, you're nodding your head. So, okay. So I'm sure we'll come back to that.
Yes.
So what I saw was that, I think I shared with you a particular story where I was driving down the road, and I at that point had a house or two and a nice car and artwork on the, and I had a very nice life, making the money. I was finally, what my parents wanted me to be and what I thought, now I'm making it real.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I was listening to a production that I had sung in San Diego, and it was a nice piece, a happy piece. I was singing it, and I was singing it at the top of my lungs while I listened to it on the cassette tape back when. But it was almost like an out-of-body experience. I almost saw myself, and I was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And tears were physically coming down my face. And I did not understand, why am I crying? I'm at the prime of my life doing what I'm supposed to be doing and making good money and having all the things I'm supposed to have. And I'm singing a happy song, but tears are coming down my eyes.
Mm. It's a beautiful example. And I'd say, again, if we stop and just unpack that a little bit, we're starting now to kind of touch a territory which really requires a lot more dialogue than we have time for. But if I was to summarize it quickly, I would say that choices that are made, career choices and commercial and entrepreneurial choices that are made, generally are made from a mind-based orientation.
Mm.
So the default is, in the world that I work in, we would call it the egoic mind or the egoic personality, but it's a cognitive place that is the point of directionality, right? The reference point.
Mm-hmm.
And that produces a very particular type of experience. There's particular outcomes that go with it. You will have usually a very well-developed outer life. I mean, it's as you described, the money was flowing and, there were things are working and you should be happy, right? That's the thing. That's the point people get to usually when they come to the outer reaches of that machine.
I'm glad you said that, the outer reaches, because on the other end, when I was coming into work at the very beginning,
yes,
I was so excited,
yes,
and this is great, and
yes,
I there was a whole other feeling.
Yes.
And I was learning, and I was finally here, and then,
yes, yeah,
then it all, years later, went away.
Yeah. And I think, that is to say that there's two dynamics now you're starting to speak to. One is that there would have been some genuine purpose alignment, I would suspect, at the start of that venture. There usually is at the start of most ventures. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it becomes a little hard to often distinguish that, oh my gosh, this is this is declining. You know, we actually have to remain quite awake or alert to, I always think of it as like a series of stepping stones across a river. Mm. And there's a certain point that the stone you're on just starts sinking away. And there's some very particular indicators about that decline process. And you were in the middle of this decline process at this point of driving along singing.
But I wasn't conscious of it.
You wouldn't perhaps at the time. And I think, you know, as we grow and become more awake, you know, for future, you'll recognize the symptoms a lot quicker. But they're very simple. That it's just where the whole process starts breaking down. You know, it's like where it was flowing, it stops flowing. Where the boss liked you, there's now a bit of disdain, you know, something's in the field between the two of you. Things start falling away and not working so well. And it takes us a while often to kind of wake up to this. Actually, we're still humming along quite, you know, on status quo, which is what the ego does, relating to trying to keep it all solid and, you know, maintained. And yet actually there's this thing happening. And I believe that the thing that's happening is a soul orchestration. I'm very, very...
A soul orchestration.
Yeah, I think so, the way I view it. And so what happens for you is, I think at that critical point, there was a changeover happening. You had literally exhausted the lessons you were going to get out of it. You had exhausted the developmental cycle around it. You had literally integrated whatever the IBM phase was about for you, you'd integrated it. And it was now in your cells, right? It was like a bow in your quiver that you could pull in, you know, an arrow, you could pull and shoot. It was practical, right? You know, you had a set of practical skills that I think, again, if we move forward into the timeline, you'll see you're going to reach back at some point and pull those out. There'll be some, you know, there's some gorgeously dynamic, almost holographic, dimensional thing that goes on with people's purpose.
As you're saying this, I'm remembering that the longer I stayed, the more there were diminishing returns.
That's what happens. That's a beautiful descriptor of that phase, actually. So here you are, you're driving along, and you've got the crystal and the, you know, you've got the accoutrements around you of success, and yet there's this decline process happening, and at the same time there's an awakening happening. That was the interesting thing. The song, you see, was the awakening point, and there's always a tipping point that goes. There's always some catalyzer, and the singing was that, you know. So here you are in this script, in this moment of time where we come to soul orchestration is happening. Here we've got the tape is playing. You're suddenly back in time, being 6 years old, up on stage, being in the warm embrace of your family, loved for your skills up the front of the room, and your musical ability and your ability to, as an artist, kind of bring a quality of light and delight and inspiration, which actually at its core opens people's hearts. You know, we were just a couple of nights ago or last night at an event with musicians, actually with Momo, and, you know, it's a real heart-opening experience when that quality of essential nature is flowing, and most artists know this. I think artists are closer to purpose than any other archetype, because what they're doing, I think they're intrinsically aware of the dynamic of something working at work through them, being used for something, right?
You know, absolutely.
And in our higher moments as artists, we know that actually it has nothing to do with us whatsoever. We're just damn well getting out of the way enough to let the thing come through, you know. So here you are having this moment, you know, where the soul has kind of orchestrated this reconnection back to an earlier point in your timeline and brought it forward. Plop, here you are in the car, having this simultaneous meltdown, simultaneous rebirth, and the tears are pouring out of your eyes and your heart's blowing wide open, and there's some recognition that somewhere along the way you lost some part of you and it died somewhere, right? Well, I'm going to tell you what died, because, again, when it's a primarily a mind-driven life, what dies is the heart and the soul. So you were actually having a heart and a soul awakening in my world.
Wow.
And reconnecting back with something that you needed to go back and pick up. And you had to go back and bring that archetype forward.
That's interesting, because so much went with that. Because now you're saying that the heart and the soul were dead.
Yes.
Brings up how I treated people at the time, or things that I did at the time that I would never think of doing now, and that I can't imagine that I said or did or wanted at the time,
yes,
that you're saying that the heart and soul were closed or dead or what have you, and that I was functioning with the mind.
Yes.
And speaking of functioning with the mind, I'm so into my heart and soul right now that my mind isn't even remembering that 10 minutes ago I was supposed to take a break. And I love that, actually, because we can do that right now and just remind everybody that you're listening to, I don't know what you're listening to, right? I'm just here with Rachel Taylor and we're having a great time, and this is Life Changes with Filippo, and life is certainly changing here. You could listen to us every Monday night at 7 p.m. on the BBS Radio Network and find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. And I'm not even going to go on with the rest of it. I want to get back to what we have because we only have a few more minutes left. And I just want to make sure that I bet by listening to this story, people are getting how they can reconnect as well. So yes. I want to continue there. And oh, by the way, your website. I don't even have my notes in front of me. Tell me what's your website again?
All right. Now, we've got a few, but if you want to work with me one-to-one in terms of the blueprinting process, it's www.rachelmaytaylor.com.
Wait, www?
Oh, don't you say that?
No, we don't. That must be a New Zealand thing. That sounds like rub-a-dub-dub three something in a tub. Dub-dub-dub. Okay. We say www, but okay, www it is.
And it's Rachel May Taylor, so that's RachelMae. taylor.com, Rachel May Taylor. Or you can contact me on email, rachel@breakfree.co.nz. So that's .co.nz for New Zealand.
Okay, and that's where the book will also be available at that website once it's finished?
Not sure yet. It's, yeah.
Okay, you're working on a couple of different deals,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And, okay, and then you're also doing a seminar here in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Well, we can get more information to everybody on the website, but okay. So, because you're here in Los Angeles, but you really are from New Zealand,
yes.
And then the accent isn't thick.
Yes.
So the dub just, you know, that gave it away. All right, so we have a few more minutes to continue.
Beautiful.
Let's.
Yeah, of course. So tell me what happened this moment where you're having this extraordinary heart-opening awakening, actually, and a recognition and a reminder of the surfacing of a new archetype, the reminder of actually the requirement to re-enter the heart and the soul as dimensions of your own being, because actually where purpose is, what would you describe it? No, probably the most accurate way to say it is the flow of purpose, or the nature of purpose, the faculties within us that detect that, is not the mind. In fact, if the mind's making some meaning of it, you're probably on the wrong track. I would be very suspicious of whatever the meaning-making faculty is about the mind's constant stream of unceasing interpretations about how it's going to fit into some big picture wish life, some egoic ideal, right?
Mm.
So that's the instrument we don't trust. The instrument we do trust in purpose is the heart and the soul. And how to attune to that, those messages, is a really big part of it. So here you are having this kind of like unavoidable interaction with fate, if you like, or destiny, or this particular beautiful coding, you know, kind of like a cosmic, divinely appointed moment, you know. And what happens? What happens in the car? You know, you got the tears streaming down. What happened next? I can almost guarantee you something big shifted at that point.
So I decided right then and there that I had to leave IBM.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Such is the potency of the soul when it starts working.
Right. And of course, I didn't.
Right.
I knew I had to leave. Right. I just couldn't for whatever reason, because the money and the pressure, the family and the friends and all that. So I stayed, and that's when I got diminishing returns. And it diminished to the point where I would have died or something. Or they would have fired me, actually, which I was one of the most decorated employees from the, there you go, the end of the that's interesting. Cause at first I received one of the highest honor that IBM has to offer.
Right.
And then am I making you hot?
I'm getting excited. It always excites me. Go on,
well then, so to the point. So it starts off.
Go on, then.
And that's our show for tonight.
Little did you know.
So started off highly decorated to getting to where I stayed to way past my time.
Yeah, your due date.
To where they probably would have fired me if I didn't leave.
Right, beautiful. So, and then, again, there's so much contained in that, and it's such a common experience. How long did you drag it out for, by the way?
2 or 3 years.
Right, wow.
I'm persistent.
Yeah.
My mind.
Right. All minds, some have more natural tenacity than others, but it's the nature of mind to keep pushing and to keep banging away at reality until it complies with what it thinks it should look like, right? Mm. And so of course, reminds me once I did a bungee jump in New Zealand, and I was so terrified. They had to prise my fingers off and push me to get me going, right? And this is kind of how it works at the early stages until you get a little bit more comfortable with the uncertainty. See, the problem is you're a marked man, and this is what happens. I always think of it with purpose. It's a little bit like, however asleep the human being is, and I mean that respectfully, we're all in a process of awakening in some shape and form, but at the earlier part of our path, there's a great asleepness. It's all part of the spell that we live in, you know? It's a beautiful thing about the Matrix trilogy. But, you know, here we are in some form of being asleep, and we gradually wake over time. But in our earlier points, we don't attune to these things very quickly. And I think what happens is, you know, the soul will use particular vehicles of particular domains of our life to kind of get a crack in the door, and purpose is one of those. So, you know, you have this awakening experience, and it's like soul is trying to crack the door open and come in and kind of fill you with a lot more of the quality of light, and which is what happens on purpose.
Mm.
You know, we're basically becoming a more rarefied, clarified, less opaque, less dense character. And the purpose impulse is what's creating that. It's actually leading the charge. There's another whole thing we could talk about in that. But, you know, there's a very intrinsic relationship to your own developmental process at work through your purpose. While you think you're madly giving your gifts away, and your calling is to do just that, you know, we need another hour just to explore actually what then happened, you know, your whole journey from that point, a journey into entertainment and all the unfolding layers that would have gone on through that process.
I am fascinated by the story that you're having me tell. And that is coming out through your questioning, actually. I'm really appreciating your interviewing me. And it's interesting that at the whole onset of this, when I met you through a friend, Janet Bagumian, and here you come from New Zealand for a short period with your funny accent, and you say to me, no.
Sorry, please keep going.
And you say to me, I'd like to interview you on your show. And I'm thinking, okay, who is this lady? And then you said, we need at least 6 or 7 shows. You know, one show won't do. And I'm thinking, what could we possibly talk about in 6 or 7 shows? And now I'm thinking 6 or 7 wouldn't be enough. And though we've run out of time today, what I'm thinking is that we should probably continue this on video on a separate and do a series that we could then share on YouTube or what have you, because I'm fascinated.
and this is just, you know, this is just one individual. I mean, the thing is, to me, I'm a little biased. I love the subject of purpose. But, you know, you talk about the student of human nature. You will get in this topic the most extraordinary look into the fabric, not only of your own being, but at a macro level. What's occurring for all individuals is at work right here, you know, and as you come to really deeply know it, just the sacredness and the profound respect that goes on for you know, the interplay between spirit, soul, and the lower vehicles, the egoic nature, the greater work, you know, the usefulness of your particular constellation of skills and talents and passions being, you know, used in the service of something, which of course is what happens on purpose.
I was going to say it gives life meaning, but then again, such is purpose.
Such is purpose, yes.
Well, we will continue.
Yay.
And you were expecting that too, I see. And I want to remind everybody that you could learn more about Rachel Taylor at her website,
rachel.com.
Okay. All right. So let's continue this conversation later. Thank you so much for having me on my show. She had me going there for a while.
Something new,
yeah, right? I got hot too, but this is the only shirt I'm wearing, so.
I think that was fantastic because it's the first time that we were able to, I think, really expose the nucleus of what inspired this show.
Mm.
Because a lot of her questioning, what her questioning got out of you was the real essence of the journey that we've been sharing. Right, the
interesting
revealing life's purpose, the inspiration again for the show itself, because that was the sharing the stories of life changes, and as you know, I have a similar background to you in terms of both of us having taken that a bit of a left turn out of our entertainment based childhoods into this corporate business world,
yeah,
and then veering back in this direction. So,
yeah. Were you ever driving and crying at the same time?
I was right behind you, actually.
Honking?
Yes,
get out of the way or do what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
Well, interestingly enough, on that same road, I just thought of this, on that same road, I would say a few months later, at about the same time, I don't know if anything or not, but I had a severe accident. Mm-hmm. Where the car actually rolled off an embankment.
I wasn't on the road that day.
No. I had what is considered a near-death experience without too much of the trimmings. But so it's interesting that at that same place.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
And I wonder what Rachel would have to say about that. You stay tuned for that one. Forgot all about that. All these things start coming, you start remembering. Talk about purpose.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, that's the reason for that.
Yeah, very exciting.
What I want to know is, what's the reason for this? For what's this leading to?
This is leading to show number 2, number 3, number 4.
With Rachel.
With Rachel. I think this is going to lead to a lot more magic. This is what it's about. I think the essence of this discussion is so powerful because we'll be able to reflect back to it.
Mm.
Because this is exactly what we're about. The whole cosmic dance that she was talking about is something that really got me thinking. Because the whole of the orchestration of the soul and our avatar self, you know, it's an interesting dance that I think we're only scratching the surface of.
You know, I like that you said the avatar self, because it reminds me, sometimes I think that we can be like that character in the movie. I don't know, did anybody else see Avatar or was it just me?
Yeah.
But
yeah, that was a joke.
So David yeah, how the character just ran off thinking he could do what he wanted to do, but without the connection to the avatar, he was nothing. I mean, he was silly boy, right? And that's, I think to myself sometimes, like, silly boy, what are you thinking you're doing? You're not being connected.
Yeah, there's a ghost in the machine. Once we get to know that ghost and understand its relationship, that being the true reality, I think that's when it starts to get fun.
Yeah. And you know what's also fun? Having those people here.
Yeah.
This is like they're dancing. The listeners probably don't know what's going on. I mean, one day we have an audience, one day we don't have an audience. But what's happening here is that we're getting ready to have a studio audience, and so these are just little tests along the way as we're gathering in different locations and with different guests and different audience members, and so far mainly friends, but and that makes
friendly
it easier
studio,
and that makes it we have friends shaking their heads saying no friends here. Making it easy and an easy, comfortable, fun transition.
Making it real
and real fun. And someday, live music as well. As a matter of fact, next week we might have live music, right? There's a little live music. Okay. Light. So if you're listening on radio, you won't be able to hear it because it's light.
Light music.
Anyway, so at some point it would be interesting to have, I mean, gosh, after the 6th series that Rachel interviews me, she should interview you.
Oh, it's my 6th series. It's coming back.
That's right.
Yeah.
And sell it as a dozen.
Yes, you can. We can do that.
But it'd be interesting, too, to see, you know, like you and I and maybe some other people, how maybe some of these things might have happened around the same time, or because we're obviously here.
That's an interesting point. If we are,
you might have,
there's a whole level of purpose, right? If your purpose and my purpose are aligned, that's why we're doing this, then
right.
What was going on in our lives as those dances were happening individually, right, those quotes, individually, but yet not, as we were
right.
Guided towards a common purpose.
You might have been behind me. It was a red Ferrari or Porsche or something that pushed me off the road.
Was it red?
You didn't have a red one?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it wasn't you. All right.
Silver, maybe, but not red.
You had a red, was it a Ferrari?
Yeah,
it was silver. Silver.
That's funny you said that because I made it, that was my rationalization for having the Ferrari. Was I'm not going to be the guy with the red Ferrari. That's a different. But I thought it was too flashy. I can have a silver one, but the red one was too flashy. I don't want to do that.
Well,
that's a whole other show.
Wait, maybe we should tape you and I talking too, and then we've got all kinds of shows developed right here on Life Changes with Filippo. Well, I want to remind everybody that that you're here with us, and we're experiencing these life changes together. And remember to stay in touch with us because we do appreciate connecting and sharing with you and also listening to what you have to say. And that helps us get different guests and different subjects. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, Iron Ways Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles, and Dorothy Lee Donahue. So to learn more about them, visit our sponsor page and click on their respective links. I am Filippo Bortaggio. And it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our 7 hosts and producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue, Mark M. Lejeune, Mark Greger, and our engineer, Seth Hendrick, thank you for joining us and being part of the show and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with the Master of Change, Filippo Bortaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at www.lifechanges.ws. Also, you can follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, Life Changes.